Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. Holly Goldberg Sloan has taken the literary world by storm with her novel Counting by Sevens. As the characters defy the labels they've been branded with, the reader embarks on a humorous and sometimes heartbreaking journey of reflection and hope. We also learn, like with many things in life and our main character's last name, it all comes down to chance.
Well, I think you can look at your own life that way, that there are things that you are in control of, but for so much, it's chance.
Willow is absolutely different from anybody else that she meets, and she is a genius. People don't really know how to react with her, except that, I mean, her parents are doing such a wonderful job in letting her explore her interests and letting her become consumed by them. But the outside world just doesn't really understand her.
She is, I suppose one could say, a genius, but I hate all of those labels, and part of the point of the book in some ways is that nobody wants to be called anything in a definitive way. So she's special, she's different. I had two sons who went to a school that was for gifted children, and they started in public school, my oldest one did, but he was very gifted at math, and to the point where for him to study math, he wouldn't be staying in the classroom, and he felt uncomfortable being singled out in that way. Sometimes being singled out for having aptitude feels exactly the same as being singled out for not being able to do something, because it makes you different. And he ended up going to this school, it's called the Merman School, Los Angeles, and I watched him change going to that school, sort of flower being around other kids who saw the world in a different way. And that's how Willow is. She sees the world in a different way, but she hasn't been able to find children to understand that. She had one friend, but it's not. She had a friend who, in the book, has already moved. She left and went to Canada, Margaret Z. Buckle. And since then, she's felt very much alone.
And because she isn't the same as everybody else, they decide that she needs a behavioral counselor, thinking that she cheated on an aptitude test or a grade placement test. I mean, you talk about being the lone fish in a sea of kids who are just who everybody else thinks is normal, though they do like those labels. And that's one of the things that Willow points out, is that everybody has a group or a niche and that they all try to fit into a specific label.
Yes, and I come to the testing part of this story in a very organic way, because my father is a social scientist. He's a psychology professor, and he spent a great part of his career doing testing, and he was looking at different aspects of character testing, but also intelligence. He was interested in that. And I think that he felt that what was being tested was such a tiny, tiny part of any person's total makeup. But so as a child, we took a lot of tests. My brother and I took a lot of tests. That's what we were, in some ways, little guinea pigs for him. So I'm very interested in the idea of testing and what someone is testing for. And in the case of the book, it's supposed to be a standard test that's given. This is in the state of California. And she gets a perfect score. And that ends up being as alarming as if she had missed half the questions. But she won't say, when they ask her, how did you get a perfect score? She won't say, well, I just took the test. It's intimidating to have people ask you, especially when you're young, if you've done something wrong. She knows she didn't do anything wrong. But as a result, she gets sent to a behavioral counselor. And when I was young, at one point in grade school, I was sent to be in a program where they were testing me, and they would reward me with M&Ms, but I didn't particularly like M&Ms. So at a certain point, I started trying not as hard, maybe as I would have. And so all those things somehow have come back and landed in my book.
Well, you say M&Ms, and then the counselor, Del Duke, which he loves the alliteration of his name as well. And he has the jar of jelly beans, but she says it makes you think that he's going to offer them to the students to make them feel at ease. But you can tell by looking at him, he just saves them for himself.
Isn't until you said that, I actually had not made the connection between my own M&M trauma and the jelly beans on his desk, which just shows that so much of what you write, there's the conscious mind, and then there is the unconscious mind. And in my case, apparently, the unconscious mind is steering a lot of my ship. But yes, I so often think that adults don't realize that things they have in their universe that might be very appealing to children are somehow off limits. It's just the way it goes. But Del Duke is one of my favorite characters in the book. He's a counselor, and he's not very good at it. And he's not very good, actually, at life. So the idea that in his own personal life, he has many issues, he has many ways you could say he was failing, and that's the person in charge of telling children how they should move forward. And I hope that I'm not saying anything about the whole role of school counselors, because clearly there are fantastic ones, but this is just a specific case of somebody who has been allowed to have a job where he's phoning it in. That's what he's doing. He's phoning it in every day he goes to work.
You want to like Del so much, but at the same time you think, well, he's an excellent foil for Willow because he's the antithesis of her. She is very methodical. She observes everything very well. And then you start to see him change as he has more interactions with her. And he realizes off the bat, you know, I've been pigeonholing all of these kids by labeling them in their different ways of strangeness.
Right.
And then she breaks the mold. And it's wonderful to see those different labels break down and how Del progresses as a character in realizing that he isn't a loser and he doesn't have to behave the way he does now or think the way he does, because there's so much more out there. You just have to be open to it.
That's exactly right. And I think that Del starts out thinking he's going to use her. He's probably someone who's seen the movie Rain Man on multiple occasions. And he thinks if he could get her to pick stocks in the stock market, or if he could get her to tell him. She seems to have secrets to success. He understands how smart she is and or how clever and how she sees the world. But then at a certain point in the book, without giving anything away that isn't probably already up front if someone knows anything about the book, she needs him. And I don't think that in the world anyone has really needed him to be there for them. And he actually can't be there in the way she really needs him to be, because he's never done that for anyone. But you get better at relationships if you are forced if you're forced to be in a relationship that's uncomfortable for you, that's where you really learn the skills of navigating, of social navigation. And Willow's very, very smart about books and science and math and the outside world, gardening, but she hasn't learned yet the complexity of people. And part of what the book is about is that my husband says that every day, and this is something very positive that he says, I think, that every day we make 1,000 little compromises when we live with other people. And by that he means I have my hands in the sink and the water is on, and he comes to the sink and I step to the left. But you don't think about that. He needs to wash his hands as well. Or you are reading the paper and you look to see who has the section you want. But you do that over and over and over again all day long. And that makes you a person who understands the world in a different way, who understands the idea of sharing or the idea of connectedness. And when you are very alone, you aren't forced to do that. I think that's why it's wonderful to have pets, to have a dog or a cat, or if you're older and you lose someone, to have something, a plant that you love, to take care of, to take you out of you. And that makes a person, in my estimation, a bigger person, a more interesting person, a more flexible person, a person who has an easier time in the world.
That's a really interesting way to do that. And Willow finds it not only with Del, but with the sister of one of Del's other students, Mai.
And I am very interested, as a woman, in strong female characters, and I am perhaps less interested in the idea of romance for kids than maybe the current crop of books. Many, many of them explore the idea of romantic love or first love, and that's not in my book. That's not in this book. But there is love in the book, and there is a different kind of love. There is the love of friendship, the love of your family, and the love of ideas, and the love of something that you have as a passion or an interest. And I think that children, young people, should be very encouraged when there's something that they absolutely find intriguing. And that can be a baseball card or a Beanie Baby. It can be a book. It can be sunflowers. Because what it's teaching them, or what they're learning from the experience of having something that they find really interesting, is that there are experts in the world. They understand there are divisions in knowledge about the thing. They can become an expert themselves, even if it's a Beanie Baby or something that seems not of consequence. They're learning that notion of people who know, people who study, people who are experts, and people who aren't. And in understanding that, you really get, I think, the possibility to have the quest for more and more knowledge, which means anyone who's still interested in the world in that big way is still growing. They're becoming a bigger, more interesting person. And for children, for young people, that's an even bigger thing, bigger lesson, I think, or a bigger palette for them to look at in their own life. And that's part of what my book's supposed to be about. Maybe my book is about none of these things. That could be possible. Wouldn't it be funny?
No.
It'd be funny if I thought it was. But clearly, and people will read it and say no.
Well, it is about that. And I think Willow, just the idea of Willow and Willow expanding what family is,
right,
happens in this book. And also the intrigue that every single character that comes into contact with Willow, it's expanding their minds and their view on the world. It's amazing how one person, one little girl who's really lost everything, can bring so much friendship and love to people that need it most when they didn't necessarily know how much they needed it.
Well, that's a great way to put, I think, something that all of us every day could try to hold maybe more tight in our lives, which is the notion that we all need each other, and people who seem different from us in some ways could teach us the most about ourselves. So I always think, I come from the world of film and television, and many people in the world of film think that some of the best films about the United States or American culture are made by foreigners, and that is because you can see it in a different way. You can see what it is in a different way. So in some ways in the book, Willow meets a family where the mother was born in Vietnam, but she's half Vietnamese, and her father was an American soldier. She comes to Bakersfield, California, and she has two children. So those children are one quarter Vietnamese, one quarter of the father that was American, and then half Hispanic from the man that she had met. So they have a difficult time putting a label on who they are, and yet the world sees them as Vietnamese in Bakersfield because they speak Vietnamese at home. And I think that family is the future of America in so many ways. But it always was. We always were a place where people came, usually across big expanses of water, to choose a new life. And we still are. And that's the celebration of what is the greatest thing about our culture, that it opens up, it expands. Willow herself is adopted. And the thing about the book is I wrote so much in order to get to what is actually published. So I have way more on the floor or in a closet or on a disk or actually on a computer drive than was published. So there are many, many things I can tell you about the characters that you don't see on the page. And for that, I thank my editors, specifically Laurie Hornick. But there are many things about who she is that at one point I was going to explain, or I did explain. And she is also a person of very mixed background and heritage, but she was adopted on the day she was born by two people who couldn't have children who live in Bakersfield, California.
And it all happens by chance, and it's one of those things, because we have a description of what Willow looks like, but at the same time, you forget, because she's such a chameleon also. By adjusting who she is with the interactions of the people she's with.
Well, she says at one point, I don't do very much physical description of her, but at one point she talks about her parents, and she explains that her father has a skin condition, and her mother has red hair and very pale skin. And her description of herself is, in a way, by contrast to them. So she says, I don't in any way look like my parents, but I think we look like we belong together as a family, or at least she believes that. And that's the truth, that there's some other emotional thing that happens so that even when people don't physically look alike, they give off something that shows you that they're together. And that's the unseen, the unspoken, that is the magic of human relationships. And that's what she's saying. So I try not to, I guess because I wrote so much and I could end up telling everyone what I thought her background was, but I took that out of the book and now I leave it up to the reader. But I really understand what you're saying, is that when she's with Del, sometimes I think you sort of imagine her looking slightly like Del, and when she's with Mai, you sort of think she must look like Mai. That is the chameleon quality of her, that she steps back. And she's always the observer. So the book is told first person from her point of view, but then I also leave her point of view in order to explore the other characters.
Well, the book is absolutely amazing. The name of it is Counting by Sevens. Holly, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Again, the name of Holly Goldberg Sloan's novel is Counting by Sevens. It is published by Penguin. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.